Iowa's trees are facing many different threats, from invasive species and disease. Today, we'll talk about planning for a future with healthy trees. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Today, I'll talk with Patty Peterson of Trees Forever. We'll talk about planning for the future forest, even with the emerald ash borer and other pests heading our direction. We'll also talk about efforts to improve water quality by planting trees and how trees improve our quality of life. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Patty will answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. The organization Trees Forever has been planting trees and encouraging others to plant trees in Iowa for nearly 25 years. This hour, I'm going to talk with Patty Peterson. She's Membership Development Coordinator for Trees Forever. Hello, Patty.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And of course, we will get to answering your questions a little later on. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here. But Patty, trees are pretty easy for a lot of us to take for granted in our communities. And although we'll talk about some of the threats facing the trees in Iowa right now, let's go back over 20 years and talk about what was the need that Trees Forever was responding to when the organization started?
Well, actually, it goes back to a drive down a highway one day. The founder, Shannon Ramsey, saw just really a dark cloud blow across the road, and it was soil. It was our rich, valuable Midwest soil blowing, and she knew what a resource our soil is and thought there should be something that she and others around her could do to keep that soil in place. So it really was from that drive. And she gathered some friends, and it really just started very grassroots that way to help hold soil in place.
And where did and how did Trees Forever start encouraging people to plant trees?
Well, it actually started in the Cedar Rapids area, and you mentioned Iowa. We've been working throughout Iowa. We actually are doing tree planting in Illinois also. And it was a process, really, of always getting people involved that were interested, having them engage other people. We've always asked people to be involved with these hands-on conservation projects. Yes, it's tree planting, but it's also planting shrubs, native grasses, and prairies in appropriate areas. And we help people learn the value of those plants and then to share that information with people that need to know. So we're always inviting people to be advocates for trees and other plants.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that are facing our trees. Different species of trees have different risks. Of course, the emerald ash borer is the one that we are hearing about the most these days, as it has just been making its way into Iowa, and we have a lot of ash trees in the state of Iowa. What kind of efforts is Trees Forever working on right now, looking at the future and these threats?
Well, we're involved with a number of things, and one of them is a partnership with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, working with small communities in Iowa and helping them understand their resources. We're having meetings, educational meetings. The Iowa DNR district foresters are doing inventories of community trees and helping them with the management plans. We're all working together, helping people understand what their resources are, what those trees, how they're benefiting all of the residents in the community, not just the person that has the tree in their front a parking area or along the street. And then helping citizens realize it's their responsibility to make sure that the ordinance and the efforts that the community puts forth is to replace those trees when they eventually do come out, that there will be a plan to replace those trees.
When you drive through a lot of communities in Iowa, you'll drive down a street that has all oaks on it or all ash trees on it. Of course, there are a lot of elm streets in communities around Iowa that no longer have all elm trees on them. But I even drove through a newish subdivision the other day where every street was named after a different kind of tree. And on that street, that is what you would see. There was crabapple and redbud. And so I think as people, we like the symmetry of that kind of planting, planting a lot of trees that are the same kind in the same location. You must see a lot of that. And does that set off alarm bells?
Well, we've been talking about planting diverse species or different types of trees from the beginning. And that was one of our early pieces of our work, was helping encourage the local nurseries and garden centers to stock oaks and other native trees that would add diversity. As the ash trees will eventually come out, we are concerned in trying to get ahead of that and helping people realize they need to diversify. And I guess one point I wanted to make clear, when I knew we'd be talking about diversity, some people think, as I've seen in some landscapes, maybe private property, well, people will plant every other tree, something else. So it looks to me like checkers. So every other tree is, I'll say, red tree. Every other tree is black tree. And so it doesn't have to be that way. We can still incorporate great design in our landscapes, in our private property, and community entryways and community space. So we may have one street that has predominant one species, but within that neighborhood, within that community, within that area, the state and region, we're going to have lots of diversity. With inventories, we're finding, just as you mentioned, some whole development is maybe 60-80% one tree species. So as we've seen historically, when the American elm came out, many of them were replaced with maple and with ash. So here is our opportunity, as we have a transition in our communities, to replant with many kinds of trees. So if you were to ask me what is my favorite tree, I used to have one. But now I like to tell people there should be 10 or 20 different kinds of trees that we would have quickly on our list, so that we're planting many different kinds of trees, so that if something comes along that is the next bad XYZ issue that takes some of our trees out, that we have plenty more left to hold our soil in place and add the many benefits that trees provide.
It seems like this is a lesson that has been really hard for us to learn. I mean, you mentioned the elm trees and the fact that we lost all the elm trees and then replaced them with maple or with ash. It seems like this lesson has been one that we've had a hard time accepting.
It has been a hard lesson to learn. So with this latest change, I hope it will be an opportunity that people first learn what kind of trees they have. Richard and I visit with many people, and they'll say, well, I have a green tree. it drops its leaves in the fall. They may know that. Otherwise, they call everything that's green in the winter, they maybe call them pine. Well, we know they're not all pine. So I'd say the first thing, if anything happens today, I hope listeners will learn what kind of trees they have on their property and what kind of trees are being planted in their community.
Do you suggest that people go out and go around the neighborhood and try to take an inventory and get an understanding of what's actually there?
I think that would be great. And it is being done. Some of our larger communities in Iowa and Illinois have neighborhood associations, and some of them are taking on the job of inventorying their neighborhood, the public trees along the street and in parks.
When we were talking about the origin of trees forever, you were talking about seeing the erosion, soil just blowing away, and that being the impetus for planting trees and starting this campaign, and of course other plants as well to secure that soil in place. Today, I know that one of the missions of Trees Forever is to work on planting to improve water quality. Can you tell me a little bit about some of those efforts?
Yes, that is an effort. We're celebrating 15 years in Iowa and almost that long in Illinois, too. Our Working Watersheds, Buffers, and Beyond program is helping landowners plant trees, prairie grass, prairie flowers along creeks and streams. That holds the soil in place. It actually helps. Some of them actually act as like a sponge. They filter, they absorb the water, hold it in place, and then slowly release it later. So it's very important for, I'll say, your property and also the properties that are downstream from those sites.
Is this one of your big pushes for the future?
Water quality definitely is, among other values that and benefits that trees and native grasses and flowers provide. I wanted to emphasize the buffer program because this is the application time for landowners that can apply for some assistance from Trees Forever in putting in their buffers. So there is an application process that people can get involved with. And it is due annually at the end of the year.
At a time when we spend a lot of time talking about buffer land that has been taken out of woodland and other grasses, that kind of thing, to put in more cropland, there are places where we see things being planted. And one of the places that I see a lot of changes are along roadsides or even in medians. Has that been part of your effort to make sure that those places are planted as well?
Yes. And like the Iowa Department of Transportation and county programs, they've been great partners. Great things don't happen all alone or by yourself. So we've had some great partners and supporters. And our roadways in the ditch and other areas that are appropriate along our many miles of county roads and state roads are great opportunities to add diversity, to hold the soil in place. And actually, they help in a great way in keeping the snow off the road. So the roadways have been an area that we see great diversity. And so it's something that we all enjoy, too, because as we were driving along the highways and byways and along trails, we're seeing a diversity of plants. So we have diversity in the animals that are there and insects and we as humans enjoy all of that diversity too.
We tend to focus on the negative, the pests, the diseases. Is there one thing in just 30 seconds that you see that gives you a lot of hope for the future with trees?
The interest I see from young people. We're seeing more and more young people wanting to get trained and learn about trees, learn what kinds of trees they should be planting. And that's what I'm really pleased about, is how many young people are getting involved.
I'm talking with Patty Peterson. She's Membership Development Coordinator of Trees Forever. And we're going to continue our conversation in a moment. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron will be here, and he and Patty will answer your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions about trees and other plants. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today is Patty Peterson. She's Membership Development Coordinator of Trees Forever. She's been with that organization for a little over 20 years. And Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming back again today. And let's get right to some calls. Melanie is on the line from Cedar Falls. Hi, Melanie.
Yes. Hi. I'm so glad that I was able to get you this morning because I have 8 drywall buckets full of cow pies that I picked from a friend's field yesterday. And now I'm unsure what I should do with them. I want to use them in my vegetable garden,
okay,
but I don't know if I can apply them now, whether I need to do something with them over the winter and then apply them. What's the best thing?
I would apply those now.
Oh, okay.
And then work them into the soil this fall.
Oh, excellent. And then I usually put chopped up leaves over the top.
That's fine, too. Right. I would do that this fall. Basically, when you're dealing with barnyard manure, they potentially may contain things like E. coli. And if you work those into the soil in the fall, they're more likely to die over winter. So they shouldn't be there next growing season.
Oh, excellent. So I can do that now and don't have to keep them around.
Right.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Melanie, thank you very much for your call. And next up, let's go to Randy on the line in Poweshiek County. Hi, Randy.
Morning.
Hi. What's your question today?
What kind of tree or trees is good that puts more carbon into their trunks or whatever, and fruit trees and just regular trees like oak or hickory or whatever?
Well,
what works best at restricting carbon from the environment?
For carbon sequestration, you want to think about trees that are going to grow to be a large size. So think about the site, the space you have. For example, if utilities are not a concern, overhead utilities are not a concern, you might be selecting a large growing tree like one of the oaks, a sycamore, London plane tree, hackberry, river birch. There are many trees that are large growing, and if they're near a building that uses energy, that will reduce the energy consumption. So that's another way of saving on the carbon that is emitted into our air. So think of large growing trees. Fruit trees are smaller plants, so they're going to sequester and store less carbon, but certainly a great plant to add diversity to the landscape, and then you get to eat some of the landscape too.
All right, so pretty much all trees are good at pulling carbon out of
yes,
of the system.
Yes, and if you're selecting large growing, then you're maximizing your potential.
All right. The bigger,
for storage.
The more.
Yes, the bigger.
All right.
And the ones that will live a long time. So, again, trees that are well suited for the site that will live a long time.
All right, let's do an email question. This is from Dennis in Moline, Illinois. Last summer in my garden, I had a 10-foot banana tree, which I sawed off at about a foot above the ground. I dug it up and put it in a large pot and put it in the dark basement. Yesterday, I noticed it had grown 2 feet in the last 3 weeks. Should I bring it into the light of the house? If not, will it still be viable in the spring?
I think you have to bring that to a sunny window. So I'd bring that to a sunny south or west window. Treat it like a house plant. Hopefully it will survive. And then you can bring it outside in the spring. But I think if you leave it in that dark basement or whatever, it's going to get very tall, very lanky, not very healthy, and not good long term for the plant.
All right. Back to the phones. Kay is on the line in Ames. Hi, Kay. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We have an ash tree that one branch died this summer, and I thought it was of drought. It's about an 18-inch diameter, and now we think the whole thing is dead. And I'm wondering, has the ash borer come to Ames yet, and should we send it in to be, you know, just for the sake of knowledge? We have planned to have it cut down.
Okay. Well, trees can die for a number of reasons, and ash trees are very, very common. So my guess is it's probably not the emerald ash borer. It has not been located in Story County at this point. Now, there are certain things that we look for if we have a problem with the emerald ash borer. One is we see a lot of woodpecker activity on the trunk. Are you seeing that?
No.
Okay. We also tend to see a lot of shoots or suckers at the base of the trunk. Are you seeing that?
No.
Okay, so most likely it's not the emerald ash borer. So what I would suggest is that you get at least two or three estimates from a tree care company, because they can vary quite a bit, and decide what to do once you have those estimates. But if you think it's dead, I would have it taken down.
And is the wood good for carpenters for anything?
Ash isn't really that used that much. So probably there's not much use for that. You could use it for firewood possibly, or someone might have interest in it as firewood.
So it could be transported across town to stay in Ames.
Right. There's no quarantine in central Iowa. There is in eastern Iowa, those counties in eastern Iowa, there is a quarantine, but there is not in central Iowa.
Okay. And I have a question about iris.
Okay.
Should the leaves be all cut short?
Well, at some point, I would cut back the iris foliage. You could do that yet this fall or very, very early next spring. But at some point, you want to get rid of that debris, yes.
I did cut all the ones that looked like they were dying.
Right.
But a couple scents that were long probably should still be cut. And sometimes it peels off down by the ground, exposing a little bit of white. Is that going to be hard on that?
No. Just as long as the rhizome itself and the roots are basically unharmed, they should be fine.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Kay, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And with me, Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension and Patty Peterson from Trees Forever. Next up, Bill is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for your show. I love it.
Thanks. What's your question?
I got a couple maple trees that I planted a year ago, and they're about 6 foot tall. Deer last weekend just shredded the bark off both of them.
Okay.
Are they going to survive? Is there something I can do?
Well, there's not much you can do, unfortunately, at this point. If much of the bark has been rubbed off, and the bucks will basically rub their antlers on the trunk, if much of that bark has been removed, that's not a good situation for the trees. They might survive short term, but my concern is that you have so much exposed wood that you may get some type of wood decay fungus, which begins to rot at a certain area, and that's not a good thing. So if it were a small area, maybe just one side, then I would definitely think the tree could survive. But if they went around the trunk and much of the bark is gone, long term, I don't think that's a good thing. So,
they went all the way around it.
Yeah. So, you know, wrapping it's not going to help at this point. Painting it's not going to help at this point. You really can't do anything once the damage has occurred. So, I guess I would maybe reevaluate the situation next spring and possibly consider replanting some of those. And what you might want to do next fall, like in September, go out there around mid-September with some nice, sturdy wooden stakes and pound in three around the trunk in a triangle about a foot apart. That way, they can't get their antlers in there to do that. And typically do that around mid-September so it's in place when they start to do this, and then you can remove those in the spring of the year. But you may have to do that for maybe 4 or 5 years in a row so they don't do that. Because when they're small, that bark layer is real thin, and they can rub off that bark layer real easy. So the small trees are at big risk.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Next up, let's go to Jim on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question for you, good folks. This past year, the city of Des Moines offered free trees, and our only obligation was to keep them watered. On the 30th of September, they put in two nice trees, both 12 to 15 feet tall, and one I've never heard of, a Kentucky coffee tree.
Mm. Yeah, we have those in Iowa. We can grow those. My neighbors have a couple. Hopefully that was a male variety, because the Kentucky coffee tree is a legume, and it does, the female produces this fairly large brownish, reddish pod that may be several inches long and thick. And it can be kind of annoying as far as nuisance, as far as the fruit drop. So most Kentucky coffee trees sold nowadays are male cultivars. You still have the nice tree, but you don't have the fruit. That tree is quite unique in it has the largest leaves around. They're huge. They're pinnately compound, but they're huge. But they're a nice tree. Not much color as far as fall color, but they're a nice tree. They're nice as far as the diversity, as far as having something different. And they grow quite well in Iowa. So it's a nice tree.
Well, that sounds good. Like I said, the city of Des Moines planted them for us. The other one was a Liberty Hybrid Elm.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that's not going to have any problem with any kind of disease.
Right. There have been a number of cultivars of the American elm that have been released, and these varieties are resistant to Dutch elm disease. They're not 100% immune, but they are resistant. They're highly resistant. Mm-hmm. And Liberty is one of those. There are other varieties, too, are cultivars like Jefferson and Princeton. And so you are starting to see some American elm cultivars in nurseries, and we can definitely plant those.
Okay, well, that sounds good.
I'm glad you mentioned some of those unusual trees. And if listeners aren't familiar with them, visiting an arboretum where trees are identified can be a good way to learn some new trees that you're not familiar with and be better prepared to make a selection if you need to replace a tree in the future.
Well, and I planted a Kentucky coffee tree at the Iowa Arboretum last spring on Arbor Day. So there are a lot of really, really neat arboretums all around the state of Iowa. That one's in Madrid, of course. All right, let's move on to the next question at 866-780-9100. Let's go to Todd on the line in Cedar Township. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Hey, I have 50 acres of trees and obviously a little concerned about this ash borer and just wondered what's the best method to manage that. I mean, do I need to take some of those down? Can I leave them standing, just let things naturally go?
You might actually want to do is maybe contact your district forester and have them come out and maybe do an inventory and evaluation of your property and see what they would suggest. So I would start there.
With the DNR.
Right, with your DNR district forester.
All right. And next time we have a DNR district forester on, maybe we'll get his...
Which will be later in November.
All right, wonderful. Next up, let's go to Bo in West Des Moines. Hi, Bo.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Good question about a maple tree we have. It's been beautiful over the years. About 2 years ago, we noticed that a limb that was lower to the ground had died. I thought it was just squirrels had, you know, chewed off the bark or something. And then last year and this year, we had some more limbs die, and it seems like it's only on one side of the tree, the south side, but it seems to be going up the tree from the lower branches upward. And then I noticed this fall, with normally beautiful leaves, the canopy has really thinned out each of the last 2 years. And I'm just wondering if anything I said strikes a tone of what might be wrong with it.
Well, I'm not sure what factor or factors are responsible for that, but to me those symptoms are very clear. The tree is declining, and I would assume that decline is irreversible. That it may be a number of years before that tree dies, but I think it's basically declining. And so I would kind of plan accordingly. And one thing I might do is if I have space nearby, I might plant one or two replacement trees so that when this tree eventually does go, I have something already established. But whatever it is, I think it's basically irreversible. And I would guess within a few years, the tree might be dead. So I would kind of plan for that.
Okay. Follow-up question. There's been several of those little helicopters, you know, those little things that come off the seeds. How do you plant those? Is there a particular way to plant maple tree seeds?
In your gutters, actually.
That works terrific. It actually does. Nice and moist and wet. And some organic matter. But as far as growing something from seed, as far as a maple tree, probably not the best idea. And I say that because most trees are cultivars, and if you grow something from seed, it's going to be genetically different. It may not be that desirable tree. And
so if just go down to the nursery and pick one that I like.
Yeah, it's probably the best. Now, an oak tree would be something different because most oaks we don't have too many varieties on that. And so they're going to be basically genetically true to the parent. And as far as getting those to germinate, in the case of acorns, you would simply collect those as soon as they fall to the ground and then plant them in the ground about a half inch deep.
Because, do you have a suggestion on a certain kind of maple that would have like the orange red?
Well, as far as some of the maples, I guess I would look at two main types as far as being very colorful in the fall. I would look at a sugar maple.
Okay.
And they do best in the eastern half of Iowa. They're native to eastern Iowa. So a sugar maple, possibly a black maple, and also the Freeman maples. The Freeman maples are hybrids. They're crosses between the red maple and silver maple. They're very common in the trade. They're very, very pretty in the fall. So maybe a sugar maple, black maple, or a Freeman maple.
Good. Okay, listen, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, Bo, thanks a lot for your call. And we've got a break coming up, but maybe we can get to this one. Jim wants to know, what are the scraggly-looking trees in roadside ditches? The foliage is red right now, and there's usually several of them growing together.
That would be a sumac. Sumacs are native to Iowa, probably the staghorn sumac. They're not big trees. I would call them small trees, maybe 10 to 15 feet tall, kind of straggly looking. They form colonies because they sucker from the roots. And so they'll spread out and form colonies, and they turn a bright red in the fall.
Yeah, they're awfully pretty
right now.
Or at least they were earlier this week. I think we've lost a lot of leaves this week.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. Well, it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Patty Peterson. She's Membership Development Coordinator of Trees Forever. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you can join our conversation with your questions about plants and trees at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Patty Peterson, Membership Development Coordinator of Trees Forever. And let's get a couple of email questions here. John from DeSoto says, I have two Marshall ash trees in my front yard. When they were planted more than 30 years ago, they were sold as seedless. Unfortunately, after 10 years or so, they turned out to not be seedless. My neighbor, who had two of the same trees planted on the same day by the same nursery, has the seedless trees. As I'm sure you know, ash trees with seeds are very messy. My question is, what kind of trees could you suggest as eventual replacements that would be less messy? He says, of course, I expect the normal leaf loss each year, but has anyone ever considered an index or rating to help consumers choose trees based on their messiness?
Well, I'll say that trees being trees, they all drop things. They all do. So it might be acorns, it might be flowers, it might be something, but they drop things. So as far as possible replacements, I would definitely look at an oak or a maple or a linden or a honey locust. They all drop things, and they can be kind of annoying at times, but those are good trees. And I don't think the debris is that bad for most people. It's something they can deal with. Because having a clean tree, it's kind of hard to have a clean tree per se. Except something artificial is clean.
Right, which so. Kind of defeats the purpose.
Yes, it does.
Patty, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, another addition I would mention is the honey locust, which those leaves will fall apart and just kind of blow away to the neighbor's yard. They're very tiny once they break up. But those actually have been really overplanted in many communities, neighborhoods. I see them in parking lot areas, mall areas, because they do tolerate some of our tough growing sites in where there's lots of concrete and such. But that could be an option as far as something that you don't have to rake up after.
If you do plant or select a ginkgo or a coffee tree, Kentucky coffee tree, make sure it is a male cultivar. You don't want the fruit on those two trees, the ginkgo or the coffee tree.
When you say make sure, how do you make sure?
Well, if it's a male tree, it's going to be a cultivar. If you're just buying an ordinary ginkgo, there's no cultivar name, then I would be suspicious. Okay. And make sure that variety or cultivar is basically a male. So if you just buy a Kentucky coffee tree, that could be male or female. I want a cultivar name that I know is a male tree.
Okay. All right, let's another email question from Ben in Des Moines. The foliage on the top two-thirds of my two sets of cannas has been killed by light frost, but the leaves near the ground and the stalk near the ground are still green. Should I wait until the above-the-ground plant is totally browned by frost before lifting them and storing them for the winter, or can I go ahead at this point?
No, I'd probably do it this weekend. Just cut them off near the ground, maybe 4 inches above the ground, dig them up. Basically kind of clean them up, let them dry for 24 hours and store them. But no, I'd probably do it this weekend.
And he also says, any suggestions on proper storage?
Well, that's the key, because as far as storage, I would put them in an open box or crate, but the temperature is the key, and that's the hard part. The temperature should be around 40 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit. And for most people in their typical modern home, that's hard to come by, but that's what you're looking for.
All right, back to the phones. Pam is on the line. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I've appreciated the conversation about diversity of shade trees. And in eastern Iowa, I'm interested in what trees are underplanted, in the opinions of your two guests, that they wish were planted more. And it could be a large shade tree or medium size. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Pam.
I'll list a couple. I like the bald cypress. The bald cypress is a deciduous conifer. So unlike most conifers, like your pine trees and your spruce trees, it does drop its foliage in the fall. It's native to much of the southern United States. It is perfectly hardy in much of Iowa. And I think it has a very nice appearance in the summer, kind of a very fine textured, kind of a medium green plant. And in the fall, it turns kind of a brownish orange, which is kind of pretty. So I like that. It's a very, very adaptable tree. It grows in very wet soils. It tolerates drought pretty well. So I would look at that. And possibly, if you can find one, maybe a Katsura tree, which is native to China. I have one myself in my yard, and very unusual. It can get to be a huge tree, not messy at all, really. And in the fall, you can have shades of maybe yellow to orange to apricot as far as the fall color. And the other thing is on the Katsura tree, when you have a hard freeze in the fall, all the leaves fall off the tree within like 24 hours, which is kind of neat.
All right. And Patty, do you have anything to add?
Well, I just want to reinforce some that we've already mentioned, the Kentucky coffee tree, the river birch, and one of the many oaks that you can select from. I don't think we've mentioned the tulip tree, which is a tree that can get to be a very large tree. It can grow up to maybe the third story of a building. Has some beautiful tulip-like blooms in the upper portion of the tree as it ages. A long-lasting tree, and fairly unusual.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Chet is on the line next in Fairfield. Hi, Chet.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions. One is about trees, and that's the holly trees, whether there's any particular problems that hollies have in southeast Iowa. We've planted three and had one of them fail outright, kind of surprisingly. That's one. And the second question has to do with just usual fall kind of tidying the gardens and the elimination from the peony bed of all of the spent and withered peony material branches or sprouts and leaves. And the warning has always been to dispose of those or destroy them. And that's a little harder to do now that we're recycling and avoiding the wrong kind of material in landfill and I don't even know if burning is an option. So how do you deal with peony debris from the garden? I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, the American holly can be a tree, but the American holly is not very well adapted to Iowa. So we don't really see it in Iowa. We can grow hollies in Iowa. The ones that do best are the Meserve hybrid hollies, like China Boy and China Girl, that type. And you have to have both to have the fruit. The females produce the fruit, but the hybrid Meserve hollies typically do pretty well in Iowa. We can also grow the winterberry, which is a deciduous holly. So those two types. As far as the peony debris, you could compost it in your own compost pile. Many cities have a composting service where either the garbage service will pick up the yard waste, and it is composted by the city or the garbage service, so you can do that. Burning is probably the least way of doing it. So I would try to compost it either myself or have the city or garbage service do it.
All right. Next up, let's go to Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a comment that what I love everything you're talking about today. At Christmas time, I buy live trees. They're picked out maybe in September, October. This time of year, I'm digging a hole to prepare to plant mm-hmm. that tree right after New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
I can go from, you know, neighborhood to neighborhood or wherever I've lived and go, oh, there was our first year Christmas tree. Here's our third year Christmas tree. They're enormous by now.
Mm-hmm.
I just, if that's something that when you talk about recycling, planting, growing trees, that's really a neat way to do it.
Right. Right. You have to kind of plan ahead with that, though, because you need to dig that typically in November and store the soil indoors. The tree should stay indoors maybe a week, maybe 10 days at most. So there are some limitations on that that some people may not want to do, but right. you definitely can do that.
And if you can make it work, it's really cool.
Right, right. And if you do that, it should be a fairly small tree, maybe 3 foot, maybe 4 foot at most. But you definitely can do it, but you have to plan ahead and dig your hole, store the soil someplace until you plant it, but you definitely can do it.
All right, Nancy, thank you so much for your call. Next up, let's go to David in Iowa City. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I have a real quick question about Siberian irises. My wife and I are going to be moving to Colorado. We've got another house out there that we're working on through the winter. I just dearly love my Siberians and hope to take them with me. I've got them trimmed down, you know, close to the mm-hmm. ground right now. And I wondered, is it something that I should wait to spring to think about breaking up and redoing, or could I take them out this month and try to restart them there at this time?
I would wait till spring if you have that option. I think spring would be better. If you do it now, they have very little time to get established before winter, and I would be concerned they may not survive the winter very well for that reason. So I would prefer to do it in the spring versus now. I think the ideal time actually would be midsummer of next year if you could do it then.
Boy, I think somebody else will be in this house
okay.
by then.
But if you
have
it,
me for it. But thank you very much.
If it's a choice of this fall or next spring, next spring.
All right. Next up, let's go to Kirk in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kirk.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
This spring, I purchased three trees from a local nursery for my residential property, a maple, a crab apple, and a service berry. And about a week ago, well, when they planted them, they did stake them with straps and stakes. About a week ago, I noticed that the straps around the maple tree really seemed to be digging into the trunk. And I went ahead and removed them, which was not easy. And there is a significant ring or scar around the whole trunk of that tree. Kind of a three-part question, I guess, then. Number one, what's the risk to the tree? Number two, the other two trees don't look as bad, but the straps are tight. I assume maybe I should go ahead and remove those before the same thing happens. And finally, three, these trees did come with a one-year guarantee. What do you think my chances of going back to the nursery with this issue will be? And I can take my answer off the line.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Well, if the strap didn't visibly work into the trunk, I would assume it's going to be okay. And as far as the other two trees, I would remove the straps. The reality is most trees don't have to be staked. So I would take it off as soon as you could. In wintertime, there shouldn't be really a need for the staking, I would think. So I would take them off as soon as you could. And hopefully this should be fine. As far as the trees and going back to the nursery, I would wait until the trees leaf out next spring and see how they do. If they all leaf out well, I think they're fine. So,
all right. Next up, John in Mount Vernon. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, it's a follow-up question to the gentleman that was talking about planting maple seeds, and I think you talked about acorns off of oak trees and so
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
We have, our daughter brought us over a bunch of buckeye seeds, which we've planted in rows in a raised bed, I think probably close to 60 or 70 of them in rows next to one another.
Okay.
We've covered that up with like some hardware cloth to keep the...
Excellent.
I was wondering what your thoughts were on that kind of planting process. We tried it last year in some, about four or five of them in pots.
Okay.
And we had one that kind of survived, but it eventually did not. And so
okay.
I'm worried about this kind of method of propagating buckeye trees in that manner.
I think that manner is fine. I would tend to do this maybe at one end of the garden where I can care for those trees for maybe a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to plant them in the fall because they do need to be exposed to cold temperatures and moisture before they can germinate. And I would do it in the garden where I can take care of them as far as keeping the weeds down and things like that. And then maybe in a year or two when they're big enough, then transplant them to their permanent site. You could also in the fall of next year, for example, maybe put some chicken wire fencing around them so the rabbits don't get them. So you can kind of protect them, care for them for a year or two, and then move them to their permanent site.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's slip in one more. Here is Amy on the line in Moline. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I ordered chokecherry bushes and serviceberry bushes, and they came in, and I didn't get them planted this fall.
Okay, so,
so
they're still in pots.
What do I do with them?
So they are in pots?
No, they're still wrapped in their wrapping.
Ooh, they're bare root. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you got those when?
About 3 weeks ago.
Okay. I would put them in the ground this weekend as soon as you can because that's really your only option. You really can't keep those over till spring. So I'd get them in this weekend, water them in well, keep them watered until the ground freezes, and cross your fingers.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Amy. But that is her best chance
at
this point, that's
her right? And I would be fairly optimistic on that. I think so.
Okay. We are out of time. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Patty Peterson, thank you for being here today. And I also want to mention you have your Woodland Legacy Symposium coming up, right?
Yes, we invite people to register for that. That's December 4th in Cedar Rapids. It's an annual event, so people can look on our website to register or look to see what other workshops are coming up. Great speakers that are coming. Richard Louv is one of them, and so I think that will be of interest to many listeners.
All right. Again, that's the Woodland Legacy Symposium from Trees Forever. Patty Peterson is Membership Development Coordinator of Trees Forever. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton, Sarah Bowden, and Catherine Perkins. And Ben Kiefer is here coming up at noon today.
Hi, Charity. Ben. Very quickly, it's a News Buzz edition of River to River at noon. We'll start off with a talking about this high-speed chase in Ames on Monday that resulted in the death of a young man. We'll take you through that and discuss the questions it raises.
Many questions. Thank you very much, Ben Kiefer. River to River is coming up today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.